Chapter 18. The shepherd on the east hill could shout out lambing intelligence to the shepherd on the west hill, over the intervening town chimneys, without great inconvenience to his voice, so nearly did the steep pastures encroach upon the burghers' backyards. And at night it was possible to stand in the very midst of the town, and hear from their native paddocks on the lower levels of greensward the mild lowing of the farmer's heifers, and the profound, warm blowings of breath in which those creatures indulge. But the community which had jammed itself in the valley thus flanked formed a veritable town, with a real mayor and corporation, and a staple manufacture. During a certain damp evening 35 years ago, before the twilight was far advanced, a pedestrian of professional appearance, carrying a small bag in his hand and an elevated umbrella, was descending one of these hills by the turnpike road, when he was overtaken by a phaeton. "Hello, down, is that you?" said the driver of the vehicle, a young man of pale and refined appearance. "Jump up here with me, and ride down to your door." The other turned a plump, cheery, rather self-indulgent face over his shoulder towards the hailer. "Oh, good evening, Mr. Barnett, thanks," he said, and mounted beside his acquaintance. They were fellow burgesses of the town which lay beneath them, but though old, and very good friends, they were differently circumstanced. Barnett was a richer man than the struggling young lawyer Down, a fact which was to some extent perceptible in Down's manner towards his companion, though nothing of it ever showed in Barnett's manner towards the solicitor. Barnett's position in the town was none of his own making. His father had been a very successful flax merchant in the same place, where the trade was still carried on as briskly as the small capacities of its quarters would allow. Having acquired a fair fortune, old Mr. Barnett had retired from business, bringing up his son as a gentleman burgher, and, it must be added, as a well-educated, liberal-minded young man. "How is Mrs. Barnett?" asked Down. "Mrs. Barnett was very well when I left home," the other answered constrainedly, exchanging his meditative regard of the horse for one of self-consciousness. Mr. Down seemed to regret his inquiry, and immediately took up another thread of conversation. He congratulated his friend on his election as a councilman. He thought he had not seen him since that event took place. Mrs. Down had meant to call and congratulate Mrs. Barnett, but he feared that as he had failed to do so as yet. Barnett seemed hampered in his replies. "We should have been glad to see you. My wife would welcome Mrs. Down at any time, as you know. Yes, I am a member of the corporation, rather an inexperienced member, some of them say. It is quite true. And I should have declined the honor as premature, having other things on my hands just now, too, if it had not been pressed upon me so very heartily. There is one thing you have on your hands which I can never quite see the necessity for," said Down, with good-humored freedom. "What the deuce do you want to build that new mansion for, when you have already got such an excellent house as the one you live in?" Barnett's face acquired a warmer shade of color, but as the question had been idly asked by the solicitor, while regarding the surrounding flocks and fields, he answered after a moment with no apparent embarrassment, "Well, we wanted to get out of the town, you know. The house I am living in is rather old and inconvenient." Mr. Down declared that he had chosen a pretty site for the new building. They would be able to see for miles and miles from the windows. Was he going to give it a name? He supposed so. Barnett thought not. There was no other house near that was likely to be mistaken for it. And he did not care for a name. "But I think it has a name," Down observed. "I went past, when was it? This morning. And I saw something, Hato Ringdale, I think it was, stuck up on a board." "It was an idea we had for a short time," said Barnett hastily. but we have decided finally to do without a name at any rate such a name as that. It must have been a week ago that you saw it. It was taken down last Saturday. Upon that matter I am firm. Apostrophe he added grimly. Down murmured in an unconvinced tone that he thought he had seen it yesterday. Talking thus they drove into the town. The street was unusually still for the hour of 7 in the evening. An increasing drizzle had prevailed since the afternoon, and now formed a gauze across the yellow lamps, and trickled with a gentle rattle down the heavy roofs of stone tile that bent the house ridges hollow back with its weight, and in some instances caused the walls to bulge outwards in the upper story. Their route took them past the little town hall, the Black Bull Hotel, and onward to the junction of a small street on the right, consisting of a row of those two and two-windowed brick residences of no particular age, which are exactly alike wherever found, except in the people they contain. Wait, I'll drive you up to your door, apostrophe said Barnett, when down prepared to alight at the corner. He thereupon turned into the narrow street, when the faces of three little girls could be discerned close to the panes of a lighted window a few yards ahead, surmounted by that of a young matron, the gaze of all four being directed eagerly up the empty street. You are a fortunate fellow, Down, apostrophe Barnett continued, as mother and children disappeared from the window to run to the door. You must be happy, if any man is. I would give 100 such houses as my new one to have a home like yours. Apostrophe, well yes, we get along pretty comfortably, apostrophe replied Down complacently. That house, Down, is none of my ordering, apostrophe Barnett broke out, revealing a bitterness hitherto suppressed, and checking the horse a moment to finish his speech before delivering up his passenger. The house I have already is good enough for me, as you supposed. It is my own freehold. It was built by my grandfather, and is stout enough for a castle. My father was born there, lived there, and died there. I was born there, and have always lived there, yet I must needs build a new one. Apostrophe, why do you? Apostrophe, said Down. Why do I? To preserve peace in the household. I do anything for that, but I don't succeed. I was firm in resisting at Oringdale, however, not that I would not have put up with the absurdity of the name, but it was too much to have your house christened after Lord Ringdale, because your wife once had a fancy for him. If you only knew everything, you would think all attempt at reconciliation hopeless. In your happy home you have had no such experiences. And God forbid that you ever should. See, here they are all ready to receive you. Apostrophe, of course. And so will your wife be waiting to receive you, apostrophe said Down. Take my word for it she will. And with a dinner prepared for you far better than mine. Apostrophe, I hope so, apostrophe Barnett replied dubiously. He moved on to Down's door, which the solicitor's family had already opened. Down descended, but being encumbered with his bag and umbrella, his foot slipped, and he fell upon his knees in the gutter. Oh, my dear Charles! Apostrophe, said his wife, running down the steps, and, quite ignoring the presence of Barnett, she seized hold of her husband, pulled him to his feet, and kissed him, exclaiming, I hope you are not hurt, darling. Apostrophe, the children crowded round, chiming in piteously, poor papa. Apostrophe, he's all right, apostrophe said Barnett, perceiving that Down was only a little muddy, and looking more at the wife than at the husband. Almost at any other time, certainly during his fastidious bachelor years, he would have thought her a too demonstrative woman, but those recent circumstances of his own life to which he had just alluded made Mrs. Down's solicitude so affecting that his eye grew damp as he witnessed it. Bidding the lawyer and his family good night, he left them, and drove slowly into the main street towards his own house. The heart of Barnett was sufficiently impressionable to be influenced by Down's parting prophecy that he might not be so unwelcome home as he imagined. the dreary night might, at least on this one occasion, make Dom's forecast true. Hence it was in a suspense that he could hardly have believed possible that he halted at his door. On entering, his wife was nowhere to be seen, and he inquired for her. The servant informed him that her mistress had the dressmaker with her, and would be engaged for some time. Dressmaker at this time of day. ... She dined early, sir, and hopes you will excuse her joining you this evening. ... But she knew I was coming tonight? ... Oh yes, sir. ... Go up, and tell her I am come. ... The servant did so, but the mistress of the house merely transmitted her former words. Barnett said nothing more, and presently sat down to his lonely meal, which was eaten abstractedly, the domestic scene he had lately witnessed still impressing him by its contrast with the situation here. His mind fell back into past years upon a certain pleasing, ungentle being whose face would loom out of their shades at such times as these. Barnett turned in his chair, and looked with unfocused eyes, in a direction southward from where he sat, as if he saw not the room, but a long way beyond. I wonder if she lives there still. ... He said. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.